Happy Friday, everyone. Thank you for those of you who are supporting Into the Word on this radio program with your finances, and for those of you that are supporting the archives online to make sure that this is always available to folks at any time, day or night. God bless you for that. On Fridays, I also want to encourage every last one of you to be with your brothers and sisters in Christ at your home congregation this weekend. If you don't have a home congregation yet, what in the world are you waiting for? Get out there, do your research, find a place near you, get plugged in, stay plugged in, because we all need that encouragement, that corporate worship and fellowship and prayer and praise and study. We need that encouragement to love and good deeds on a week-by-week basis. If you are currently looking for a home congregation and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East Building, we'd sure love for you to check us out. Maybe we'd be the place you could settle down and call home. I want you to open your Bible today to 1 Kings chapter 8, and if possible, as a parallel, 2 Chronicles chapter number 5. Last session, we saw how the construction of the temple building was finished, and how all the materials that were inside of the temple and out in the courtyard, they were all finished as well and put in place in time for a dedication ceremony at the beginning of Solomon's 12th royal year. Now, at this time in Israeli history, the kings celebrated the beginning of their year on the first day of the seventh month of the Jewish year, which means in the fall. This was also connected to the agricultural cycle. It was connected to the sabbatical cycle and the Jubilee cycle. And so the Israelis of a habit make a big deal out of the seventh month gathering at the worship site, in this case, Jerusalem. The first day of the month is called the Feast of Trumpets. The tenth day of the month is called the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. And it was a day of somber reflection and fasting about how important it is to have the tabernacle first, but now the temple as the place where God can deal with sin. And the people can be refreshed in their relationship with God by that. And so what a fantastic month in which to set the dedication ceremony for this brand new temple complex. And Solomon specifically sets up the dedication to finish, I believe, with the kickoff for the Feast of Tabernacles. Because it takes 8 days for the process of dedication to happen. That's how long it took for the dedication of the tabernacle. And so it will be ready to go fully whenever Tabernacles or Sukkoth kicks off in this particular year. And so we're talking about basically September going into October of 970 BC. Let's reread just the very beginning of what we left off with last time. From 1 Kings chapter 8. Then Solomon assembled the elders of Israel and all the heads of the tribes, the leaders of the fathers' houses of the people of Israel before King Solomon in Jerusalem to bring up the Ark of the Covenant of He who is out of the city of David, which is Zion. And all the people of Israel assembled to King Solomon at the feast in the month of Ephanim, Ithaniim is a word that has to do with persistent, and it seems to be a reference to water that continues to run even during the hot time of the year. And so it is the seventh month. So the first order of business in the dedication of the temple is to bring God's throne up to the new palace, because it will be God's place of residence, if you will, ceremonially from here on out. And so all the elders came, and the priests took up the ark. Now, those are the only people that are supposed to carry the ark. There's going to be 12 of them, and they do it using the gold-covered poles on the sides of the ark. Now, remember, I always teach that the Ark of the Covenant should not be thought of as a decorative box. It's actually a sedan chair, which is a wheelless chariot in ancient thinking. It was carried by these bearers, these priestly bearers, with poles that were on the short sides. And that will become clear whenever the ark gets placed in the Holy of Holies in a little bit. And so picture them carrying this throne of God up, no doubt, some brand new steps that go north out of the royal complex in ancient Jerusalem and up to this brand new temple. And so they brought up the Ark of He Who Is, the tent of meeting. Now, this is a little detail that's missed by a lot of people. The tabernacle has been located a few miles northwest from Jerusalem at the city of Gibeon for a few generations now. That has been dismantled because some of the components in it will be placed into the sanctuary of this new temple complex. What are they going to do with the ancient rigid framework and with the fabric fence and the fabric tapestry covering of the ancient tabernacle? We don't know for sure. It's likely, this is just my opinion, that for the moment it will be stored away in some of the storage area that's been included in the building of this new complex. It is possible, I've wondered about this from time to time, that it may be set up as a, for lack of a better term, an historical display inside the court of this new temple complex. Just the just the shrine building itself, not the fabric fence. Don't know. Maybe. But anyway, they brought up the Ark of He Who Is, the tent of the meeting, and all the holy vessels that were in the tent. So all those things that were made hundreds of years ago, in the time of Moses and Aaron, those will be brought into this new temple and will be put in use in this new temple. More than likely, they will be the ones used on the first 8 days of dedication. That's just my guess. The priests and the Levites brought them up because they're the only ones that are allowed to touch these holy items. This will be the last time that the tabernacle is moved by the priests and the Levites. Verse number 5. And King Solomon And all the congregation of Israel who had assembled before him were with him before the ark, sacrificing so many sheep and oxen that they could not be counted or numbered. So they have a big ceremony of sacrifice in order to bring the Ark of the Covenant up to this new Temple Mount. Now, where are these sacrifices happening? They're not happening on the bronze altar, the brand new one, because that will be inaugurated by a special supernatural action of God. So these are probably being sacrificed on sacrificial altars already in existence, or perhaps put up specifically for this celebration. And the priests are doing all the sacrificing, but Solomon is the one that's presiding over the whole special the special celebration. And they're not even trying to count how many of these animals are sacrificed. Now, verse 6. Then the priests brought the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is to its place in the inner sanctuary of the house, in the most holy place, underneath the wings of the cherubim. For the cherubim spread out their wings over the place of the ark, so that the cherubim overshadowed the ark and its poles. Now you remember when we described the 20 by 20 by 20 cubic cube of the Holy of Holies. There were two giant cherubim statues that adorned that special room. They were half the height of the ceiling in that room, so they were 10 cubits high. So that's still massive. That's 17 and a quarter feet tall. They were made of olive wood, but they were covered in gold. And their wings stretched from one wall to the other, because these two cherubim, remember they have four faces and four wings, their outside wings are touching the external wall, or the outside wall of the Holy of Holies, and their inside wings touch each other right over the center of the room, like a canopy. And so the Ark of the Covenant has now been placed immediately underneath those center-touching wings. It's an amazing throne room, because that's exactly what it is. And then they left the poles in place. We know that that was standard procedure in the tabernacle. And I told you way back when we talked about the design of the tabernacle that it seemed to me that the poles of the ark jutted out into the holy place, holding back the bottom of the veil, so that whoever was standing at the altar of incense day by day would be looking across that altar right straight at God's throne, and that the poles would be on either side of the altar of incense, and that once a year on Yom Kippur, the high priest would go around the altar of incense, but inside of those projecting poles, to go in front of God's throne to offer the Yom Kippur sacrifice of blood. Well, this Holy of Holies is much larger. And so the poles are not going to project out into the holy place where the priests do their work every day, and where the altar of incense is located in the doorway of the entry into the Holy of Holies. but they do project out very close to that doorway. And so we are told in verse 8, and the poles were so long that the ends of the poles were seen from the holy place before the inner sanctuary. So if you were in the western end of the holy place, the place where the priests did their daily work, standing there by the altar of incense, you could easily see those poles right there in front of you to either side of the Ark of the Covenant. But we're told they could not be seen from outside, meaning outside the inner sanctuary. So when you were clear outside of the temple building, there's no way in the world you'd be able to see the Ark of the Covenant or those poles, because it would be just too far away, and the altar of incense would have been in the way as well. That's just the way it worked. Now, the writer of Kings, as well as the writer of Chronicles at this point, they say this, and they are there to this day. So we know that these books are written over a long period of time by multiple inspired authors. But when this was written, the Ark of the Covenant was still in the Holy of Holies of the Solomonic Temple. Verse number 9, little interesting note here. There was nothing in the Ark except the two tablets of stone that Moses put there at Horeb, where he who is made a covenant with the people of Israel when they came out of the land of Egypt. Now, we know from the historical writings earlier that when the Ark was in the tabernacle at the beginning, it had three items in it. There were these stone tablets. It's the second edition written by the finger of God of the Ten Commandments spoken from Mount Sinai. They're still there, apparently, when the Ark gets put in at this time. But the other two items seem to be missing. They were the golden container of one day's ration of manna and the staff of Aaron and Moses, the power staff that they carried during the Exodus and the wilderness experience, that had budded to show that Aaron was the choice for a priest by God himself. And we know from that budding process that the staff was made of almond wood. Well, the staff and the pot of manna are gone. Where did they go? We don't know. Nobody knows. Some have speculated that it was stolen whenever the Ark had gone into Philistine territory. I don't know. I am going to make this suggestion to you, though. It is possible that God himself took them. We know from the book of Revelation that the Ark of God is in the heavenly realm right now. That's where it comes from in the book of Revelation. It specifies it there very clearly. The Ark disappeared inexplicably sometime in the 600s, shortly before the destruction of the temple in 587 BC. Many people have speculated that it was squirreled away in a cave or taken away into Egypt, or all sorts of things have been suggested. But I'm telling you that if it's in heavenly realm right now, God must have taken it. It is interesting to me that in the book of Revelation as well, the pot of manna is mentioned. It says that to the one who overcomes, I will give the right to eat of the hidden manna. And so my guess is that passage indicates God has control of the pot of manna. And that leads me to believe if he's got control of the ark and he's got control of the pot of manna, he probably has control of the Aaronic rod of power. And I think it may, in fact, all of these things be part of Jesus' royal reign. It'll be kind of like the representative pieces of his power, where he sits upon the Ark of the Covenant as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He has his king's staff that's basically this power rod from the past, and he has control of the hidden manna that he gives to his people who have overcome. That's just, all of that is just me speculating for the fun of it, okay? For just the enjoyment of trying to make sense of certain things that we see in Scripture that are not fully explained. But that still leaves the question, well, if the rod was gone and the pot of manna was gone, how come the Ten Commandments on two tablets were still there? And my answer is that they were still part of Israel's requirements. They were still expected to be living by these 10 statements from God. And so he left them there in his throne to make that very clear to them. Again, just my speculation on why they are the only things left here. For those that wonder about the book of Hebrews mentioning that all three items were still there, remember that in the book of Hebrews, the writer is referencing the tabernacle, not the Solomonic temple. And so that's the reason for that. All right, back to our text, verse number 10. And when the priest came out of the holy place, let's see if I want to stop here. No, I want to stop right there. Hold on. Go to 2 Chronicles now. 2 Chronicles, verse number 5, excuse me, chapter number 5, verse number 11, because this bit of information is not included in the Kings passage. Verse 11, 2 Chronicles 5, and when the priest came out of the holy place, that's the Holy of Holies, for all the priests who were present had consecrated themselves without regard to their divisions. So apparently it wasn't just the 12 priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant that entered into the building of this brand new temple at this point. It was a huge entourage of priests that went in and watched firsthand as the 12 priests placed the throne of God there underneath the wings of the towering gold-covered olive wood cherubim. And the priests were also being accompanied in this ceremony by the Levitical singers and Levitical musicians. It says, and all the Levitical singers, Asaph, keep that name in mind for some of the Psalms, Heman, we'll see that one as well, and Jeduthun, yes, that name as well, their sons and their kinsmen, arrayed in fine linen with cymbals, harps, and lyres, stood east of the altar with 120 priests who were trumpeters. So these musicians are all out near the platform that Solomon is on right now during this whole ceremony. And they are providing musical accompaniment to the placement of God's throne in the temple. Verse 13, and it was the duty of the trumpeters and singers to make themselves heard in unison in praise and thanksgiving to He who is. And when the song was raised with trumpets and cymbals and other musical instruments in praise of He who is, this is what they said, for He is good, for His steadfast love endures forever. His chesed, the fact that he likes these people and he wants what's best for them. It's one of the favorite lines in the Psalms. That's the theme for the day as they put the Ark of the Covenant in its place in the Holy of Holies. And so when they did that and they put it into the house of He Who Is was filled with a cloud so that the priests could not stand to minister because of the cloud, for the glory of He Who Is filled the house of God. Now, this is exactly what happened the day they dedicated the tabernacle. When the Ark of God was put in its place, God's glory blossomed from the area where the Ark was at outward in this glory cloud to take over the entirety of the sacred building. And the priests ran away from that glory cloud because they felt that it would be intruding on God's presence to remain there. And so the same thing happens here. God's glory fills the entirety, not just of the Holy of Holies, but the holy place where the priests would normally be doing their work, and then out into that tower on the front, the vestibule in the front. And all the priests just kind of start rushing out and running out. And they're all observing God taking control of his new palace. And we are told that Solomon at this point injected into or observed, He Who Is has said that he would dwell in thick darkness. So he sees this happening right in front of him, and all the people there see it happening. And Solomon goes, it's just like God said. He's going to dwell right here. Mark your place. We'll get back to this next time we're into the Word.